to the Hardwood Hustle, powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, Associate Head Coach from Utah Women's Basketball, Gavin Peterson, joins the show. Coach Peterson has over 20 years of Division I coaching experience and is in his eighth season at Utah, where the program is coming off a 27-5 season after advancing to the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. In this episode, they discuss what a successful program culture looks like, staff dynamics, qualities of a great head coach, shot selection, and much more. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Hardwood Hustle. We've got a special guest, Gavin Peterson, who's the associate head coach, University of Utah. Tons of success. Know a lot of people that know him and speak really highly about him. Specifically, lately, we had Bob Starkey from LSU on one of our episodes, and he's like, man, that Utah team is so well coached, and he just sung y'all's praises and what an amazing job y'all do. And so he recommended that we contact you and try and get you on. So we're really super excited to have you, Gavin. Thanks for joining us.
That's awesome. Thank you very much for having me.
Look, we're going to dive into a couple different topics here, but I want to go broad first. You guys have had a ton of success there, and you're the associate head coach. I think you've been there 8 years, but been the associate head coach for 5 years now. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And if you were to kind of put that into some order for us, like, what is Utah doing so well? I mean, you guys are a pleasure to watch. You play all aspects of the game. You guys seem connected as a basketball team. Just seems to be something really special going on there. So as coaches are thinking about building their own program, what are some of the pillars and some of the key things that are going on with inside Utah basketball?
You know, I think you hit on it in terms of the production that we put out on the floor that is fun to watch. I think it starts with just having unselfish players in your program. You know, and that starts from the recruiting process. We want to find kids that are a lot about the team, about making winning plays, the right play. And obviously they're skilled offensively. They love being in the gym. It's almost we have to get them out of the gym and make sure that they rest, because rest is fully an integral part of you being successful. So, you know, it always starts with recruits. And I think we do a tremendous job, Coach Roberts, myself, and the rest of our staff, with identifying players that fit to our system and to our program. So once they get here, it's just a matter of them learning the intricate details that we really, really, you know, make it a point that our players kind of understand, and then they get out there on the floor and they're able to play freely. You know, it hasn't been a linear line in terms of our success. You know, we started building this thing in 2015, 2016, felt we were on the right track. Our best season in year four was cut short with three significant injuries to starters. Then you kind of had to restart the whole, like, rebuild program. And we thought we were on our way. And then COVID hit, and it's kind of like the rug got pulled out from under us. So what we did, and I think the key to our success, was we really got back to kind of who we were as coaches and what our program to be about. And we have a saying, you know, grind, grit, and fun. Grind, grit, fun. And we want to grind. We want to make sure that we embrace the hard work, the preparation before the lights come on game day. And we're going to have a toughness, a grit about us, that when things do get going wrong or things start going in the wrong direction, we have that toughness and that mental toughness to put our foot down and pivot and make sure we change directions. And then at the end of the day, we enjoy each other's company, our players, our coaching staff, everybody. We have fun with it. We're around each other so much that if you're not having fun with it, you know, it could probably wear you down. And that's when the pressure can get to you, or just it just becomes a little too much and people need to take a break. So we enjoy each other's company a great deal. But those are the things I think, you know, as the course of our tenure here at Utah, we've been able to adapt. But at the end of the day, we still play an up-tempo brand of basketball with unselfish players. And we continue to look for the right fits with our recruiting, so that can continue in the near future.
Gavin, you know, I was going to ask you a different question, but let's sit in on this for what you just said a minute. I want to hear more of you unpack this. Grind, grit, and fun. You know, grind and fun are usually not associated with each other. But I do think it's a really important thing, because I think oftentimes I've been in a lot of conversations with players and parents and coaches where they talk about, well, we just want to have fun, or we want to get, like, they make them exclusive. Well, you can work really hard and have fun. You can be about winning and have fun. So, you know, just maybe unpack it even more. How are you communicating and messaging that to your players so that they buy into that motto that we work really hard, but we have fun? Just unpack that some more.
Yeah. So, you know, like with the grind, you know, it starts with the summer. Kids come back. We get them in workouts. We have music going on. We try, as anything we do competitively, we celebrate. And we're fortunate. You know, I know a lot of programs out there don't get to have a practice squad of males in the women's basketball game. But at our level, we are very fortunate to have that. So we have fun when we're going against the guys and we're beating them. And if we lose, the guys talk right back to us. So it does create that intense grind type of environment. But it's our job to make sure that we are celebrating and having fun with the successes that we do have. The same thing goes with games. We have what we call, you know, like your buddy system, and you're assigned at the beginning of the year a teammate, and that's the person you're supposed to make sure is on time. If they're not 5 minutes to practice and they ain't there, you better get on your phone and call that person. When they're in the game, you should be celebrating their success. When they come to the bench, you're the one, you know, giving them high fives. The whole team does it, but it's like we really try to promote that from within in terms of celebrating each other's success. And that's come a long way. If you watch, you know, our reserves on the bench, whenever a three-pointer is made, usually I'm looking the other way by then, but when I see it on film afterwards, I just die laughing, because they're having as much fun as the people in the stands sometimes. And it's really cool. But I think that just goes with the grinding part, finding ways in practice, finding ways in training to put in a little bit of joy and fun. And you'll find coaches, if coaches do this, they will get to another level in terms of their commitment and their effort level, just because they're capable of it. It's just, do I want to do that extra? Do I want to? But, you know, with the celebration and just having fun with the process, it just makes a world of difference.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, if there is no grind, there's probably no results. And if it's no fun, the grind usually isn't worth it, you know? And so they
know
each other.
And TJ, and that's exactly what happened to us that COVID season. We did not, you know, as a coaching staff, you know, we had a lot of empathy in terms of what our players were going through. Like, I mean, our freshmen were basically locked in their dorm rooms. You know, hey, food will get delivered to you, but you got to eat it in your room. Like, what college experience is that? It was uncharted territory for all of us. So as coaches, and the empathy that we had, we took a step back. So we didn't have the grind. We wanted to make it, you know, let's make it fun. Let's make it this and that. And but that got us so far away from the formula in terms of what it takes to be successful at our level. And we got so far away from that we just, you could never bring it back in. So we, you know, learned from that, adapted, and we'll never make that mistake again, because there is a way to grind and have that formula for success with fun and excitement and passion. So that's something we'll never relinquish.
Yeah, and I hope coaches hear that, because, man, these kids only get to do this for so long. And, you know, it breaks my heart sometimes when, you know, I think basketball is the greatest game on earth, and kids should be having some fun doing it. You know, if they want results, they got to work, but they should be having some fun. I want to ask this. You talked about earlier skill, love it, and make the right play. And thinking about this, I'm coaching my daughter's eighth grade team, and that whole make the right play, like, it sounds like a really simple catchphrase, you know, but a lot of times it's just make the simple play. So I got a two-part question here. One, what does skill look like for you guys in different phases of the season? So meaning, you know, kind of your preseason, and then you get into practice. Now you're into games, you know, you go through, because I think a lot of coaches have trouble balancing, you know, all that. It's like, oh, now we're in games. Now we're just 10 minutes of skill development. It's 50-50. But what's your philosophy on that? And then also speak to making the right play.
Mm-hmm. So our skill development piece, it's obviously year long, but to what you kind of just pointed out, it just goes through phases. So right now, our spring, summer, into early fall will be probably right now about 100% skill development. And we have four kids on campus right now. In June, the rest of the team will come back and it'll be close to 100% for a couple of weeks. Then it'll probably dip down to maybe 60%, and the other 40 will be utilized for some type of team, more of the philosophy, the big picture, right? In terms of like rebounding, just things defensively, rotations, just things so they can get under their belt. So by the time the fall comes, we can really get into it with practice. Once the fall comes, it probably takes a dip down to 50%. It guys goes 50-50. And then by the time official practice starts, I would say anywhere between 15 to 20% within practice. And that's, I'm talking about the skill work with like your position coaches and all those type of things. The way we play offensively, there are some skill development traits that are a daily basis. Like we'll do 2-on-0, then we'll go 2-on-2, 3-on-0, go 3-on-3 a lot with our pick and roll action, dribble handoff action, and making reads out of those type of plays. So that is a skill set. So we never, ever lower the preparation in that regard. So we'll continue that all the way through. Post passing is another one. We'll run some quick hitters where we really work on post passing. So those things are a little more detailed and specific come basketball season, but we'll continue to do that year out. And then in terms of making the right play, I think something that we've done here at Utah over the past couple of years, we've really allowed the analytical side of the game to help us and to really lock in the buy-in from our players. They've always, you know, through the process, trusted us. But when you have numbers to back it up, it's you can't argue it. And you can pout all you want, but the results speak for themselves. So an example, a kid might drive into the lane, draw the help defense, go up, get fouled. Okay, you get two free throws. Good job. But we'll point out that we had one of our best shooters standing in the corner. And if we get 10 of those shots, we're probably going to make 7 of them. And so thinking of it, like, great attack, but now let's make sure we're working on identifying that help defense, kicking it out, because, you know, just analytically, the best shot in women's basketball and in basketball is a wide open 3-point shot. And we have the skill players that can knock those down on a consistent basis that we're going to do so. And the other thing with analytics that it really kind of helped me, I was always one of those coaches where in transition, if you make an advanced pass, is that the best time to shoot a 3-point shot? I've always been like, no, like it's in transition. We should be able to explore the layup, then look to maybe drive and kick or reverse the ball, hit two sidelines, and then you'll kind of get the defense kind of recovering and just trying to match up, and then you might get an easier open shot. Well, the analytic piece tells me that the best shot is the open three. And that doesn't matter if it's in the first 5 seconds of the shot clock or the last 5 seconds of the shot clock. So for me personally, I'm just like, wow, I guess you're right. Like, I mean, to be honest, and now that I'm aware of that, the more and more I see our players pass up a wide open shot to try to make a play, it usually ends up in a turnover. And I laugh, and the kids they'll tell you what I say. It's like, yep, that's the basketball gods punishing you for not taking the open shot. So I say that a few times and they kind of get a laugh. They laugh. I mean, again, trying to keep it fun, but sending home the point that, hey, open shots and it's your shot, shoot it. Like there is no yellow light, no red light. Like that's part of, I think, what makes us great. Just being able to move the ball, finding open shots, and then being able to knock them down.
Gavin, that's good. You mentioned two words earlier, were unselfish and free. And, you know, as a college coach, you get the fortune to recruit the unselfish player, mm-hmm. you know, but most coaches, the majority of coaches don't get to recruit. They get what walks through the halls, right? Yeah. So my question is, once you recruit it, you do have to foster it. You have to teach it. You have to develop it. Could you speak to how y'all foster this unselfishness in your program? I think you're touching on it mm-hmm. a little bit right now, but maybe just speak to the unselfish characteristic and the free characteristic, how y'all develop that in your program.
I think you're 100% right. You continue have to develop that. And even we do. We reinforce it with film, whether it's, you know, in front of the team. The saying, you know, shout praise, whisper criticism is really true. So we really try to highlight the good plays that our players make, the unselfish plays. You know, those get rewarded and celebrated. And then, you know, if somebody is struggling with it, and we've had this situation, it's like, why is that shot good for player A, but me, player B, that's not a good shot? And those, it just takes time and understanding, and the communication piece is integral, because as soon as they understand the why, then they'll be like, okay, I got you. So it is, it's continuing, to monitor. And for us, a lot of times the signals, body language, like you can tell a kid is just not into what we are saying. And sometimes it's just a misunderstanding. So, you know, Coach Roberts, myself, one of our assistants will pull him to the side, like, hey, notice this, like kind of, you're not feeling right or not looking right today. Like anything going on? And you give them that opportunity to open up, they will. And then you just attack it from an angle of like, okay, now listen, now that is a good shot or that was a good play. But here's what we're seeing and here's what we'd like you to at least take into account. There is no, this is the play you have to make. When it gets to that, that's when you're going to have, I think, kids pull away and just start rolling their eyes, talking under their breath and being like, man, you don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, if you meet them halfway and be able to discuss and again, educate them on kind of what we're teaching, and giving them that, I guess, voice within that process, that goes a long way. And our kids know, like our doors are open, and it's been good for kids to kind of come in and ask. You know, there was a kid this year who came in and asked me, like, we kept saying, you're disappearing on the floor. Such a vague statement that we coaches make sometimes. It's just like, when she sat down, I'm like, yeah, do you know what that means? Like, no. I said, okay, let me pull up a few clips and I'll show you exactly what we're saying. She walked out of here like, I got you. Yep, I see it now. But it's just like, you know, us coaches, we use some of these sayings sometimes that kind of go over their head. And it's like, okay. So that's where the misunderstanding and the communication piece, sometimes, you know, there's some gray area, and you got to make sure that there is no gray area. They really understand and understand the why in what you're doing.
Yeah, that is a solid goal. We talk all the time about understanding the why. I mean, sometimes you work in vain when you don't know why, you know, and it really puts meaning behind your work. Yeah, but I want to talk about something I'm really passionate about. See, when I was 23 years old, I became a head coach. So I didn't get much experience as an assistant. And there's a big part of me that kind of wishes that I had or had more opportunities to do that. But I also know that our associate head coach that I've had for 10 years now, so we just lost three assistant coaches that took, you know, good jobs. But the one associate head coach has been with me 10 years. And if you were to ask, like, maybe probably the most pivotal piece of our program, it's him. Like he just holds so much together. And, you know, I've got my own thoughts on like all these wonderful things he does, but you know, you don't go from being an assistant to the associate head coach, being in it with a head coach for 8 years, being in the same program without doing some really good things for the program. And so curious as to like all the coaches that we have that are assistants. And also, you know, things that they can do, but also the other side of it, like the head coach that you're working with, like that relationship, what are they doing that makes it great for you? Because you stayed, you know what I mean? What are they doing that makes it great for you? And in the flip side, what are you doing that makes it great for them? And that relationship dynamic, I just think this is so important for a staff to be aligned and passionate in the same direction. So if you could speak to that for a second, that'd be great.
Yeah, you know, I've been very fortunate to work alongside some great head coaches. Started in Hawaii with Vince Gu, I think he's still the all-time winningest coach there at the University of Hawaii. Then John Newley, who recently just left the University of Idaho, but is their all-time winningest coach. Then I got to work for Laura Beeman, who's currently at the University of Hawaii, and she's doing phenomenal things there, going to multiple NCAA tournaments, couple back-to-back, and then Lynn Roberts. The one thing that all of them have in common is they allow their coaching staff to coach. They allow their coaching staff to have a hand and a say in player development. So they're allowing the staff people to get out there and gain that experience that if an opportunity presents itself down the line, they're going to be ready to be able to take that and run with it. The other thing I think all of them have in common is they also want their staff to be able to grow. So they're not just going to give you the same, responsibilities year in, year out. They're not just going to copy and paste. They're going to look to evolve their staff. They're going to look to challenge their staff. So I've been very fortunate. I've been able to get those responsibilities. I've been able to lock in and, you know, give my best to those responsibilities. And I think over the course of time, being successful in those responsibilities just get more things assigned to you. And I think when you attack it with the mindset of owning it and making it the best you can possibly do, I think good results come of that. I always, as a coach, and again, I'm not the head coach, but I'm working alongside her and I'm trying to make her look as best as she possibly can in every aspect of the program. Like, that is the job. I'm also here for our players whenever they need me. The things that I fall back on, like the three words, I feel like it has to resonate with you. One is loyalty. Two is like communication. And then three is availability. So the availability piece is just, we don't work a 9-to-5 job. We don't. And the plus side to that is the off season, you don't have to work a 9-to-5 job either. So it's you're always on. And then there's times when you can get away. But the availability piece is you've got to be available to fill in whatever gaps that a head coach needs you to fill in, whether that's out in recruiting, whether that's doing an interview on campus, or whether that's a speaking engagement. Whatever they need, you've got to be able to pivot and adapt and be available to do those things. Communication is also huge. There need to be no surprises. So as soon as, you know, whether communication comes in all forms, right? Phone call, text messages, face-to-face, emails, whatever it may be consistent with your communication with your head coach, with your boss, as well as the other, you know, staff members, and just keeping them up to date with your responsibilities. I'll give you an example. And I've been doing this now for Lynn for 10 years, 2 years at Pacific and 8 years here. I'm involved with our scheduling. And scheduling is a nightmare. But I update her. And, you know, I update her usually every month. And then she finally came in. She goes, dude, I know you're doing a great job. Update me just towards the end of the season. Like, she trusts now that I'm doing my job and getting it done. So she doesn't need to be updated because she's already knowing that I'm taking care of it. So now I update her, you know, just every time to time when big decisions have to be made. But again, the communication is there. And then as the trust is gained, you know, the communication becomes maybe more face-to-face in passing in the office, but it's still nonstop. It's always, always going. And then the last thing is loyalty. And loyalty, people can look at it from, you know, a negative standpoint, like, oh, there's drama and, you know, you got to pick a side. I look at it as, you know, the loyalty in terms of our program, our boss, our coaching staff, like our loyalty is to them. And so, as well as our players. So if things do come up from the outside or within, you know, you've got to approach those type of conversations with the program in mind, not you, not like trying to get a step ahead or trying to use it as maybe a springboard for you. It's you've got to do all you can do to protect your program. And I've been fortunate. Every boss that I listed, there have been no big drama. There have been no NCAA violations. Like, they're first and foremost good people. They do it the right way. They treat their, you know, staff and their players the right way. So it's real easy to be loyal. But when there are, you know, times when somebody's a disgruntled parent might call you, or a player is upset about playing time, that's when you get tested in terms of your loyalty. And for me, it's never in question. I will always have my head coach's back as long as I'm a part of that program. And I feel like that is not always the case. You hear some horror stories out on the road and hear it from other coaches and other programs. And it's unfortunate, but it's just something that I hold true to me, and it's just part of who I am. And I think maybe some of that comes from the Hawaii upbringing.
So Gavin, that, let's unpack that a minute. You know, staff dynamics are so interesting to me, and every staff has its own personality because you have different personalities, right? There's the leadership is very, it's got some science to it, but it's so much art because we're dealing with human dynamics. The question is, you just brought this up, is the player comes into your office because they don't want to go. There's a layer of comfortability that they have with you. It's kind of like the boss who makes the joke and everybody laughs because they're the boss and they think everybody thinks they're funny. The reality is, being the head coach, there's just a layer of of separation, let's say. So when the player comes in your office and they're like, you know, Coach Peterson, like, coach is being hard on me, or I'm not getting enough shots, or, and you have to balance between creating a safe space for them to share and open up while not throwing the head coach under the bus. You may even agree with the player, and you might even disagree with the head coach, but you may not be able to show that. I mean, there's a lot more there, but there's a lot of layers to it. So, like, just give us maybe a tangible example how you work through a situation like that.
Yeah. I think first and foremost, you've got to be able to have, like, the proof, right? Everybody, like, they have their opinions. It's like, what's the proof? Like, show me. So, like, okay, a kid comes in and is upset about playing time. Well, first, I'll have our stats. I'll pull up our stats. I was like, hold up, let's take a look at this. I'll pull up some film. And then that is kind of, well, this is where, you know, as a staff, we're looking at, and this is where we feel like maybe you could do a better job. And this might be a way where you can maybe get more playing time. Then we'll push that aside, and then we'll dive right back into the process. What can you as a player control? You can't control, you know, sometimes a head coach's decision is going off gut feel. And you know, I help them realize, like, you know, Coach Roberts has earned the right to trust her gut. She has earned the right to make those tough decisions. Sometimes we might be like, why are we doing that? Well, she's coached enough and won enough games where I'm on the roll with it. You want to go zone? Let's go zone. Like, I that's where I try to kind of get them on our level. It's like, there are some things that you just sometimes got to trust and you got to roll with. But I'll always go back, and we will always end the meeting or when they come and sit down is, okay, what can you control? What can you positively think about and positively think in terms of your impact on the team? And how can I help you do that this week? Let me help you accomplish that through the process. So they know that I am in their corner. They know that I'm going to do all I can to maybe help them make the splash. And, you know, there was a kid this year that went through that, and I'm not going to lie, she made such the biggest improvement and jump mentally from September to the end of our season that I get goosebumps talking about her, because she was a freshman and she's coming back. And I just, like, oh my gosh, like, that kid made such a big jump. But it was because, like, okay, stop worrying and comparing yourself to a teammate. What can you do? What can you control? And how are we going to go about attacking that and buying into that process? And then at the end of the day, what can we as coaches do that to help you accomplish that? And, you know, she did it, man. But I think that's where the loyalty piece is. Like, you're not going to be like, yeah, man, you should have played then that game. Like, I don't know what was going on. Like, that ain't the way to go.
All right, Gavin, before we wrap up, I got one more question, and then Sam and I are going to rapid fire just a few quick hitters at you to just take some nuggets away for some coaches. But, you know, I was looking at your bio. You got a beautiful family, and you got a, you know, smile and joy when you talk to you. And we know what a grind it is to coach college basketball, right? We also know, like, in high school coaches, like, they're fully invested. I mean, there's not a lot of balance there either. They care just as much. You know, even youth coaches, they care. They're fully invested. And when we talk to coaches, oftentimes they struggle with this whole balance because it's not really balanced, right? There's this up and down and you go. But how do you make the most of that? And how do you thrive when you're program and thrive at home as well?
Yeah, there's a few things that I've adjusted with over the course of the years. And I think, you know, having a family at home, it really forces you to have to do that. First and foremost, I have an amazing wife who I got the privilege to coach with. I actually met her through coaching. She was at Sac State and I was at Idaho State. We met, did the long distance thing. She actually gave up coaching when we moved back to Hawaii to coach there. And then we started our family. So she hasn't coached since we coached together back in Idaho. And that was, I think, in 2010, 2011. But having her understand the grind of the demands, I guess, and the periods in which I'm going to be away, traveling, a lot of that. So she understands that. And she's able to allow me to just do what I do and be able to commit to it. But it starts with that. But at the same time with kids don't understand that. I'm fortunate. I coach women's basketball. I have great, great role models for my children. So my kids are around. They come to every game. They always ask, can I go to practice when they don't have school? And every now and again, we do bring them. And so I get to include them into that day-to-day operation. There are a couple adjustments, like I mentioned, that I made. There are times in the off season, I do not take my laptop home for whatever reason. Like, I just won't. And I'll try not to take phone calls when they're up during dinner time. I'll try to set them up. If I have to, I have to. I get it. It's recruiting. And sometimes we don't operate on our schedule or operating on a coach or a recruit or a family schedule. But I try to keep that family time being family time. And that's helped me. I won't pull out my computer during the season to do video breakdown at dinner time or when the family's up until they go to bed. So I've made those adjustments to be able to pour into them. So when I'm present with my family, I'm present with my family. But on the other hand, I'm usually the first to work because I get up ridiculously early and I get to work. I love being in my office. I love the peace and quiet. And if I have to do film stuff, I'll do film stuff. So there is a grind to it that even, you know, Lynn will come in and like, dude, take a break. And I'm in a rhythm. I'm in a routine. And so I kind of get it done. But Lynn is really good. And all the bosses that I've, you know, got the privilege to work for, they've been really good at about like, get out of here, like take some time. So when we do have some time in the off season to take off, she's making sure like, hey, where are you going on vacation? Like, you guys better get going. Like, what's going on? Like, let's go. Get out of the office. And so we do have that, the freedom to be able to get your stuff done and then just go enjoy, your fruits of your labor, really, because you work so hard during the season. Now let's enjoy some downtime and have fun with your family and do what you got to do. So it's been really good for me.
Yeah, I love it. All right, we're going to just grab a few nuggets out of here. I got a couple. And then Sam will have a couple and they'll just be quick answers here. You develop post players. What's a little nugget there in developing post players, like a crucial concept that you think, gosh, this is really important for a post player to be good?
Footwork. That's like the foundation. Footwork, footwork, footwork. I will, if you rewind and take a look 10 years ago, I was working on the same things that I continue to work on now with our post players. It's just footwork. If you can understand your pivot and you can understand establishing a pivot foot off the dribble. You have so many options to be able to just go to by breeding the defense, but it just starts with that good foundation.
Love it. I got one on the defensive end, one on the offensive end. Defensive end, you know, what's just something that you think allows your team, like one teaching point that you think is, this is one of those most important things we teach that allows us to be successful on the defensive end?
Help side defense. I feel our players know that their teammates have their back. We are not the most athletic team in the Pac-12. But we will try to, as much as possible, take away your strengths and be the aggressor on defense, which will allow our opponents to beat us every now and again, probably maybe even 3/4 of the time. But they know that you're going to get to that second layer and we're going to rotate. So we're going to try to get you not just to your second option, but to your third option. So our help side defense, you'll hear us say it from day one all the way until March.
Yeah, love it. Favorite offensive action?
Ooh, that is a good one. I'm falling in love with the ghost screen. Kind of just fake an on-ball screen, get to that three-point line, give that guard the option. Do I make a jump hook pass to my post who can shoot it, or do I keep attacking downhill?
Love it. Sam?
The defensive non-negotiables.
Yeah. Okay. This is a long answer because we always say non-negotiable is communication. You got to talk, but we have players that don't talk, man. We all know it. So the one thing is just effort. You got to give effort. It's funny. If you go to practices and everybody's, you know, some people will talk and you'll hear coaches blow the whistle like, "Hey, we got to talk better. We got to talk better." You know, talking is great, but I would take an all-out effort by all five people on the same page, even if they're just muttering words.
3 sentences or less advice to your younger self in coaching.
Don't be in a rush to try to advance your career. And don't get frustrated with the adversity or roadblocks that get in your way. Embrace them.
I like that. Embrace the adversity. Number one leadership advice you've been given or witnessed?
You got to be willing to listen. Leadership is not just talking. And that's something, you know, you learn as your career evolves. And I've learned that from great leaders. Laura Beeman at Hawaii, Lynn Roberts, like they are amazing leaders because they listen and then they, you know, make adjustments when needed.
Wow, that's powerful. Gavin, hey, listen, man, we can't thank you enough. Where can people follow you, Utah basketball? Like what's where? And I know they're going to want to know more. So where can they do that at?
Yeah. I know my Twitter feed, Coach GP7. You can always DM me there. I will definitely get back to you. You can also look on our website. I think it's UtahAthletics.com. And my email address is also gpeterson@huntsman.utah.edu. And I'll spell that out because my last name's with an E, not an O at the end. So it's gpeterson@huntsman.utah.edu.
Man, that's awesome. I appreciate you being willing to give back to coaches and share like that and even to give your email. You know, I think that coaches will be really glad that they were able to listen to this episode, that you were taking the time to in your busy schedule to pour into them. And hey, we'll be pulling for you and the Utes and look forward to watching you guys more in the future. But thanks a lot, Gavin.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. I love what you guys do. And all my interactions with PGC have been nothing but phenomenal. So I'm always willing. So please don't make this the last.
Yeah, we won't. Hey, that's awesome. Hey, he is Sam. I am TJ. We are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Instagram @Hardwood_Hustle to stay up to date on the latest episodes and share your thoughts with our coaching community. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.